Hello, and thanks for tuning in to the 10th and Broad Church of Christ podcast. Today's message is presented by guest speaker Guy Hammond, Executive Director of the Strength and Weakness Ministries. Let's tune in now for Guy's message.
Good morning, everyone. Well, thank you so much for having me here this weekend. Certainly so appreciate your hospitality. My name is Guy Hammond. I'm from Toronto, Canada. And I'm the executive director of an organization I started several years ago called Strength in Weakness Ministries. The ministry has primarily two purposes. The first is to just educate Christians on LGBTQ issues and give them the strategies they need to be able to effectively share the good news of Jesus with their gay friends and neighbors. And then also to help Christians who come from a homosexual background but are striving to live faithful Christian lives. They live with unwanted same-sex attractions, and, you know, we need to help them do so successfully. I recognized several years ago that the church was falling woefully short in this regard. I felt like there was a whole demographic of the world's population that most Christians were just ignoring. Not because we didn't care, we're a caring group of people, but it had more to do with the fact that we didn't know what to say. And, you know, what you don't understand, you become afraid of. And so I felt like so many Christians were like, you know, when it comes to people in the LGBTQ community, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to invite these people to church. I'm not going to talk to them about Jesus. I'm not going to say anything because I don't want to put my foot in my mouth. I don't want to insult anybody. I don't want to spend my time arguing. Too many minefields there, so you know what? I'm just going to stay silent. But you know, if there's anybody who should have a spirit-filled and hope-filled message to the LGBTQ community, it should be the Christians. I mean, the whole world is talking about this, except it seems us. So I just felt like, man, we need to do better than this. The LGBTQ people in our lives deserve better than this. And the church deserves better than this. And so I started this ministry. And, you know, it's really taken off over the last several years, and we're now helping thousands of Christian men and women who are homosexually attracted to live faithful Christian lives, and we're helping people in over 90 countries around the world in three languages, and that's the ministry that I run. Of course, I spend a lot of my time traveling around and speaking in churches, Christian universities and colleges, faith-based groups on this stuff, and that's why you have me here in Wichita Falls this weekend. So thank you to your senior leadership, Ken and Paula, and your eldership for having the faith and the courage to say, hey, listen, we need to be talking about this. It may be countercultural, the message. It might be certainly controversial, but we want to be a church here at 10th and Broad that is relevant and is dealing with the issues that is happening in our culture and society today. And so that took a lot of faith and courage. You didn't know who this Canadian was or what he was going to say when he got up here. And so I appreciate the faith and courage it took to have me. I started participating in homosexuality when I was 12 years old and continued until I was in my mid-20s. I never chose to be homosexually attracted. I just kind of discovered it at a thing called puberty. I don't think anybody chooses what they're attracted to. Now, we are 100% responsible for what we do with our attractions. That we can control. The attractions of themselves, I mean, those are very automatic and involuntary. And so through my teen years and into my 20s, I had a boyfriend for 10 years. And in my early 20s, became an active part of the gay community in Toronto, Canada's largest city. And was living my gay life and was very promiscuous. Had sex hundreds of times with different men. And around the age of 24, I knew my life was in trouble. I knew I needed some kind of intervention or help. I just didn't know where to go. And of course, in God's perfect timing, he sent somebody who invited me to a church. Of course, I was like so skeptical. I was like, church. I know those people. Right? They're all bigoted and homophobic, and I'm not going to find anything at church. But then I kind of reasoned, you know what, guy, give it a shot. Go to this thing. Who knows? And I went and I loved it. It was called the Toronto Church of Christ. I went to this church and I was like, wow, this is really interesting. I thought, I think I'll come back again. So I continued to do that for 2 years. 2 years of going to church. And I built relationships and friendships with these people in this church, these Christians. And they were so kind and hospitable and had me in their homes, and I became their friend. And all the while, I was still living my gay life. After about 2 years, I was like, you know what? I'm pretty impressed with this Jesus fella. I think I want Jesus more than I want my gay life. And so I studied the Bible and decided to become a Christian. I was baptized in August of 1987, so a long time ago, 35 years ago. And I can tell you, I have not participated in any kind of homosexual activity since my conversion 3.5 decades ago. So I've just done the best I can the last 35 years to submit my life to Jesus and follow his plan for my life rather than following my plan for my life. And, you know, God's been very kind to me through that. Now, here's the thing. I'm still homosexually attracted. I don't know why God works the way he does. If I was God, I would do things very differently. I would have liked to have thought after 35 years of trying that God would have made me attracted to girls. It's never happened. I'm just as attracted to men today as the day I became a Christian 35 years ago, even though, as I said, I left that life behind forever. But time and time again, God has said to me, Guy, don't worry about it. My grace is sufficient for you, and my power is made perfect in weakness. And so I tell people all the time who come to my ministry for help, who cares what you're attracted to? I don't think God stays up late at night worrying about what any of us are attracted to. For the Christian, the opposite of homosexuality is not heterosexuality. For the Christian, the opposite of homosexuality is holiness. And so our goal is to strive to live holy lives and follow Jesus, and that's what we are striving to do. So that's what my ministry is. That's who I am. That's why I was here this weekend. And hopefully for those of you who attended, you were able to get some helpful perspective and some bridge-building language and, you know, some understanding of how best to reach out to the Guy Hammonds of the world. I want you to know there are other Guy Hammonds walking around in Wichita Falls right now. One of the biggest misconceptions I think we have about people in the LGBTQ community is that they're not open to Jesus. That's a huge mistake. The biggest problem that LGBTQ people have isn't that they're gay or trans. The biggest problem in their lives is they don't have a relationship with Jesus. So I'm hoping that, and I appreciate the fact that you're trying to be here at 10th and Broad, a church that is welcoming to everybody, including the people with whom you disagree, and you know that this will be a safe place for people to come and ask questions and try to figure things out while they strive to follow Jesus. So thank you so very much for having me. Please check out my website, strengthinweakness.org, if you want to learn more. Tons of information there. I was only able to just to touch on things this weekend, but if you're interested in more, there's certainly lots there. So I want to start by telling you a story. There's an ancient legend about a Persian king who was discouraged, dejected, and sad. And he called for his chief advisors and wise men and court wizards and charged them to invent a motto that would ease his pain during times of difficulty. And he imposed three conditions relative to the wording of this motto. Number one, not only did it have to encourage him in times of trouble, but secondly, the sentiment also had to be appropriate to keep him humble and grateful during times of prosperity and happiness. Thirdly, the motto had to be concise enough to be engraved on a ring in which he intended to always wear on his middle finger. So the wise men, you know, they thought and thought and they had meetings and they tried to come up with a motto so concise that would so perfectly fit the instructions they were given by the king. But they had no luck. But finally and unexpectedly, the king's daughter presented him with a ring bearing these three magic words, "Even this shall pass away." You know, in other words, nothing lasts forever. Not sorrow, not fame, not fortune or pain, nothing lasts forever. You know, if it's true that all good things must come to an end, then certainly it should be true also that all bad things must come to an end. You know, Bad times surround us, don't they? Times of crisis and problems. You know, this has always been the case throughout human history. John Keats, one of Britain's greatest poets, he was a great observer of the natural world. And from that, he acquired the view that life in the main was mostly about hardship and suffering. He said, quote, "People were always perpetually straining at particles of light in the midst of a great darkness." He wrote that in 1818. Welcome to 2022. You know, there are not only global challenges that we see going on in our world, but just in everyday life. I mean, it produces problems, doesn't it? You know, problems surround us. In fact, I would like to think that's probably true for all of us, that as soon as you've solved one problem, you're working on solving the next problem. I mean, have you ever had a perfect day? When you actually absolutely have no problems at all? I haven't experienced that yet. You know, as soon as one problem is solved, another one appears. And it requires faith and courage just to live a regular life. Troubles come in different forms and different measures. More month than money. Unemployment. Difficulty in relationships. That aching back. That broken down car. That Visa bill whose amount due never seems to decrease. When we're lonely or isolated. When we're filled with guilt or shame, when people that we trusted disappoint us, or when we disappoint ourselves, or when we feel like the church has let us down, or when we can't seem to move those mountains that we've been praying over for so long. You know, these are challenges that everyone this morning is familiar with from one degree to another. But then there are other times when life gets really serious, when we start facing life-altering crisis, you know, when it takes more than just a serious faith, but a dangerous faith to see your way through, a critical illness in yourself or somebody that you love, bankruptcy, separation, divorce, chronic pain, failure, addiction, depression, the death of a loved one. You know, when crises like that enter our world, I think it's good for us to remember that God has designed it, that we are able to recover. You know, whatever the crisis is, with courageous faith, even this shall pass away. And the Bible everywhere teaches this same truth. In the book of Job, one of his so-called friends, a guy by the name of Zophar, as you read through the book of Job, he really didn't have a lot of good things to say. I mean, Zophar was not the brightest light in the harbor. The elevator didn't go all the way to the top. You know, he was one Brady short of a bunch. You know, the list goes on. I just aged myself there, didn't I? Half the audience is like, Brady of a what? What are you talking about? You know, he was a man who didn't really have too much good to say. However, good old Zophar did utter one thing correct in the book of Job. And hey, even a stopped clock is right two times a day. He said in Job 11:16, "Job, I know you're covered in sores and boils and you're scraping them off with a piece of pottery and know your wife is nagging you to death here. Well, your kids all died and everything's been ruined, but you know what? You will surely forget your trouble, recalling it only as water's gone by." In other words, Zophar says, "Job, even this shall pass away." You know, have you ever committed a sin so grievous that you thought you could never recover or be forgiven? David had that feeling. Of course, we read about King David in the Old Testament, and he committed adultery with Bathsheba and had her husband murdered on the front lines in war. And the Lord said this regarding the punishment that David would face in 1 Kings 11:39. He said, I will humble David's descendants because of this, but not forever. In other words, even my punishment shall pass away. In fact, regarding how God treats all of us after a time of rebellion, he says in Psalm 30, verse 5, "For his anger lasts only a moment, but his favor lasts a lifetime. Weeping may stay for the night, but rejoicing comes in the morning." In other words, even this shall pass away. So it is a biblical truth that nothing in this world, no problem, no trouble, no crisis lasts forever. I believe this is a gift from God. It needs to encourage us. When we are in the middle of our problems. You know, what about physical pain? Yeah, that's a different kind of problem, isn't it? When you face physical pain, it can be really tough. I mean, you ever had a migraine headache that you thought would never go away? It did. Ever had a broken bone, a twisted ankle, a sty in your eye, a bad toothache? And you swore it would never end. Or you had that cough. And you just kept coughing and coughing. You're like, when is this cold? It's never going to leave. You know what? You're not coughing anymore. At those times when nothing seems to help, not the power of positive thinking, not drugs, not anything. At such times, God wants to remind you that no pain lasts forever. I mean, Job's discomfort eventually did leave him. The boils eventually did leave. Even Christ's agony on the cross mercifully lasted only 6 hours. What about anxiety? Whew. Boy, watching the news can cause a little bit of anxiety, can't it? You know, yet I can tell you, whatever the world is upset about today, it will soon be forgotten. For instance, if I was to say the word today, Vietnam, to some, you would think of one of the most brutal wars ever fought and the deaths of over 1.5 million people. And yet there's another demographic, another generation in this room who would most likely think of a place with an exotic culture, with amazing beaches and a place you'd love to vacation at someday. Events that once caused the world tremendous anxiety in years past are long gone and almost forgotten. Even 9/11 is taught as history now. What about temptation? You know, even here God promises relief. No temptation lasts forever. You know, there was a time in Jesus' life when he was tempted by the devil himself. Now, I don't know how things work in the spiritual world. You know, when we get tempted, is that the devil himself, the big guy himself who swoops in, or... you know, are there demons who do this kind of stuff? I don't know. But, you know, if you do get special attention from the devil himself, wow! I don't know how that day would go for me. I mean, that's what happened to Jesus for 40 days. The devil didn't assign any demons or any underlings to swoop in and try to get Jesus to sin, because all he needed to do was get Jesus to sin just one time. And all bets were off. So Satan was like, you know what? This takes my personal attention. So I'm swooping in and I'm going after this guy. So for 40 days, you know, he went after Jesus, and wow, time and time again, Satan tried his best to get Jesus to sin. And time again, Jesus held on to righteousness and refused to give in. And it tells us in Luke 4 verse 13, when the devil had finished all his tempting. I mean, consider that word, all his tempting. He left him for a more opportune time. In other words, the temptations eventually stopped. Now, not only will God not let you be tempted beyond what you can handle, but he will also give you a way. No temptation lasts forever. A lot of times we feel like when we're faced with temptation, you know, it becomes so difficult, we just can't control ourselves. Yes, you can. You don't know, you don't understand, I'm mad and I'm angry and I just have to have that toothpaste out of the tube moment with my wife or with my kids or with my husband, or hey, I just need to talk to my mom and dad this way because I'm mad and upset and I'm going to slam the door and no, you don't. Calm yourself. No, you don't understand, I just love to look at that website. I mean, I just got to go there. I can't control myself. No, you don't have to go there. No, this is the kind of shows I watch. I just can't help myself. No, I just love to gossip. I mean, that's how my mom was, and that's how I am. And when I hear a juicy piece of news, I just have to tell somebody else. And I know it's wrong, and I shouldn't, but I just love to gossip. And so I got something now I want to pass on. I just have to do it. No, you don't. Close your mouth. You know, you have the ability to be able to control yourself. Just slow down and calm yourself. The fact is, if you can just control yourself for a few minutes, the temptation's going to leave. No temptation lasts forever. Now, it is true that Satan will come back and look for a more opportune time. It's okay. You take it one temptation at a time. But you can handle it. You know, whenever you're facing the enticement to sin, just remember, just wait a few minutes. Just pause long enough. Even this shall pass away. What about sorrow? That's a different kind of pain, isn't it? Sometimes more hurtful than any kind of physical suffering we can endure. Sometimes we can go through a grief that is so intense it makes us physically ill. Have you ever been there when you couldn't eat, you couldn't sleep, you couldn't face people because you were so emotionally disoriented? I know some of you have been there. I've talked to you. I've heard some of your stories. People that you've loved who have passed or gone through some great suffering. You know, even though I'm homosexually attracted, when I was becoming a Christian, I would have thought it would have been great to be able to marry someday, but I didn't know how that was going to happen. I'd never had a girlfriend before, never been attracted to a girl before, and I just thought, I'm going to have to live a celibate life, and I'll never be involved in an intimate relationship for the rest of my life if I'm going to follow Jesus's plan. I was more than willing to go through that. It wasn't my first choice, but I thought, if Jesus can die for me, I can be celibate. I mean, so okay, I'll do that. But after a period of a couple of years of being in the church, met this wonderful Christian woman, and you know, just became the best of friends. Her name was Kathy. After a period of time, I was like, man, she's amazing. I can't imagine living my life without her. I mean, I love her so much. It's true, I wasn't physically attracted to Kathy the way a heterosexually attracted man would be, but I was like, really, is that the, if that's the only thing that's slowing me down here, why would I allow that to stop me from being able to enjoy all that life has to offer, sharing it with another human being? And of course, Kathy and I talked about it, and she knew my past and knew what I was attracted to, and we just both decided we were going to refuse to allow the fact that I was homosexually attracted to be a defining part of our relationship, and we're just going to love each other. And so I asked her to marry me, and she said yes. And Kathy and I were married for 28 years. Raised a family with 4 kids. It was amazing. Kathy was the greatest gift I've ever been given in life. I'm so grateful for the 28 years we were together. But in 2017, she was diagnosed with stage 4 brain cancer. She was a healthy woman, active, a lot of hiking and kayaking. She was in really tremendous shape. I was the slob sitting on the couch eating Doritos every night, and she was the one all active and everything. And if anybody should have gotten sick and died, it should have been me. But she woke up one morning and couldn't open her left eye, move her left arm, and got her to the hospital, and they said, yeah, you have a brain tumor. They did emergency brain surgery, and they're like, there's nothing we can do. You got 6 to 8 months. You might live a year if you do some chemo and radiation, but there's no hope here. And of course, we were shocked by that news. And Kathy, you know, really inspired me that final year of her life. She really taught me that experiencing crisis and problems in our lives is no reason for us to stop living out our Christian faith. I mean, if that had been me dying, I would have whined and complained all year and driven everybody nuts in the final year, but not Kathy. She was strong and courageous and faithful, and this is the picture of me and my family about 6 months before she died. And, you know, as I watched Kathy live her final year, I would say that she taught me more than anything else that, man, this is the time to let your faith shine. In January of 2018, by then she was pretty much restricted to a wheelchair and so much chemo and radiation going on, and she was largely paralyzed by then. And the church that we belong to, she knew that she didn't have much time left, and she thought, I got energy to maybe go to one last church service. I want to go. And I was like, honey, you're too sick. Just stay home. And she was like, no, I really want to go. I was like, sweetheart, you're in a wheelchair. It's a lot of work. It was a big church, 1,200 people. And I was like, just stay home. We don't need to go. And she goes, I'm going to church. I was like, okay, well, we'll put the wheelchair in the back of the truck and we'll get you there, you know? And she went to that event and said her goodbyes. And on her way home, we were driving down a highway. And she suddenly, my son Greg was in the back seat and Kathy was in the front with me. And she suddenly went into this full body seizure. I mean, she curled up. She was shaking uncontrollably. You know, I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to get her to a hospital. So I was already going like 120 kilometers an hour. And I thought, so I'm going to go a little bit faster. I thought, where's the hospital? So I thought, no, this is not safe. I pulled off on the side of the highway and I called 911, told them where we were. An ambulance showed up pretty quickly and Kathy was still seizing. And so they came, they got her, they put her in the back of the ambulance and they said, follow us, we'll get her to a hospital. So when we were in the hospital, I got in there and she was lying on a gurney in the ward there, and the seizures had stopped. She had come to, and as we were waiting, the ambulance attendant who had been in the back of the ambulance with her came up and said, Mrs. Hammond, I'm leaving now. I'm going back on shift, but you're in good hands. The doctor's about to see you, but before I go, I just felt compelled to come and thank you for what you said to me in the back of the ambulance between your seizures. That really meant a lot to me. I'm never going to forget that. So goodbye. And he walked away. So I looked at Kathy. I said, what did you say to the guy in the back of the ambulance? And she said, well, I told him in between one of my seizures that I wasn't afraid. I was dying. But it's all right. Because I'm a Christian. And I know when I die, my sins are forgiven. And I'm going to be with God in heaven forever. And I told him that one day he's going to be in my situation. And so he should get himself to church and start reading his Bible and making things right with God so that when he is in my position, he'll be equally assured of where he's going when he dies. I looked at her, I thought, who are you? I haven't talked to anybody about Jesus or invited anybody to church in months. Here you are. In the middle of your seizures in the back of an ambulance and you're sharing your faith, I was like, that is crazy to me. But you see, Kathy just refused to allow a crisis in her life to let her stop living like a Christian. The same month, actually, January, where I live, I live in a little town, Northern Ontario, Canada, and we have a lake in our town. And in the wintertime, of course, it drops to minus 20, 30, minus 40. So the lake freezes over and we like to go skating on the ice, and my son especially loves to go play hockey. So anyway, it was really cold out this one particular day. It was like minus 20, minus 30 out. And my son yells upstairs. He goes, hey, Dad, yo, I'm going down to the lake to play hockey. I was like, all right, have a good time. About a minute later, he yells up, hey, Dad, what? Mom says she wants to go skating too. Tell her no. She's in a wheelchair. It's minus 20 out. We're not going. Okay. But a minute later. Hey, Dad. What? You better get down here. Oh, my gosh. So I went down there, and she's trying to get a coat on. I was like, what are you doing? She said, I want to go out on the lake. I'm like, honey, it's minus 20 out. You have a brain tumor. You're in a wheelchair. How on earth are you going to go on a lake? She said, well, can't you drive me out on the lake on the truck? Because people do that. You know, they go ice fishing and you drive your truck out on the lake. And she goes, can't you just drive me out on the lake and then push me around? Oh my goodness. Like, this woman's going to kill me. So I was like, all right. So we got her coat on and everything else and got her in the back of the truck. And my son put his skates on and kept her in the wheelchair and just started pushing her around the lake. You know, and she had her arms out, woo-hoo, you know, just having this great time. I was like, wow, this woman's amazing. You know, she's only got months to live and she's just trying to squeeze in as much life as possible before she goes. Well, as the months went on, of course, things continued to decline rapidly. And She was finally put into a hospice facility, and about a week before she died, the doctor came in and said, this is it. You've only got days to live. And so I said to Kathy, who by then was paralyzed, she only had movement in one arm by this time. It's the only thing she could move. And so I said, honey, is there anything you want to do before you die? Do you have a final wish? By then she could barely speak, and she just whispered, I want to go swimming. I didn't have the heart to tell her. I was like, okay. So I went out and found the doctor. I said, hey, listen, can you come in and help me out here? I asked her what her final wish was. I thought she was going to ask for like a popsicle or something. She wants to go swimming. I said, obviously we can't do that. Can you go break the news to her? And the doctor said, well, why can't she go swimming? I was like, she's paralyzed and hasn't been out of the bed in months. And the doctor was like, what's the worst that could happen? I was like, well, you know, you have a point. So I went out and we hired a six-man ambulance crew and hired a nurse and got her whole family together, her mother who is still alive and her brothers and sisters and my kids. And we all went down to this lake and we carried her out into the lake and plopped her in. For a half hour, she was able to move her one arm and swim. And a few days later, she died. You see, for Kathy, dying of a brain tumor was no excuse to stop her from living out her Christian faith. In fact, she used that as that life-altering weakness in her life to become an example to so many. You know, I know your problems are real. I know your pain is severe. I know life is difficult and challenging for you right now. But don't ever use that as an excuse to stop living out your Christian faith. Three or four months before Kathy died, we have a lot of supporters, people who send money to us just to support our ministry. And I thought it would be good to kind of send out a little video, an interview we wanted to do with Kathy. So we sent that out and just asked her some questions about what it's like to be dying. And anyway, I thought in closing today, I would share just a couple of minutes of this interview with Kathy. And the question in this part of the interview is, you know, what message do you want to leave your kids? And, you know, Kathy was just sharing what her life was like and what it was like to be prepared to die. And so I'd like to share that video with you now, and that can help you understand her faith and courage as she got ready to go. You see, even in crisis, you can still share your faith, help others. You can still be kind. You can still forgive. You can still be positive in your spirit and outlook in life. You can still live your Christian faith. In fact, if there's ever a time to let your light shine to a lost and dying world, a world that is terrified of crisis, it is when, as we as Christians are in crisis, to show that we are not of this world. So what's your problem this morning? Financial insecurity, perhaps, even this shall pass away. Unhappy romance, perhaps, no romance at all. Unemployment, maybe you're in school fearing that you'll never see graduation day. All of this one day will pass away. Are you lonely this morning? Are you grieving the passing of a loved one? Even this shall pass away. Listen, folks. Only heaven is lasting. Only love lasts forever. Only God is from everlasting to everlasting. Only Jesus, his Son, and our Savior is without end. And it is these that the Christian pins his and her hopes and aspirations, because these divine things shall never pass away. Meanwhile, this side of the grave, nothing lasts forever. Not your physical pain, your emotional pain, your anxieties, your temptations, even your terminal illnesses, like the ancient Persian king who needed daily reminders. We too need to keep reminding ourselves amid our crisis that even this shall pass away. Brothers and sisters here at 10th and Broad, thank you so much for your kind hospitality. I'd heard about you before. I had done a little bit of research. I had read up on your website. I had seen some of the things you'd accomplished here in the community, and it was encouraging to see, but I can't tell you how encouraging it has been to my soul, not just to read about it and see it online, but now I actually get to see your faith face to face. Thank you for letting me be here. Amen.